This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy, happy days to us all. You can be a big part of this production. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It's a text line. Got Jess P.S. working hard on the board. Happy, happy Monday to you, Jess.
Happy Monday to you, Dom.
Big show today. Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Lots of topics to get to. The mega civil war, is that a thing, or is it just the chaos caucus doing what they're gonna do? We'll talk about that. An endorsement for the soon to be again perhaps elected Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Was got a couple of them. One might be more important than the other. We'll have to find out. Stick around for that conversation. But of course, you know, the news of the day, how do we not talk about the icon of the 70s and someone who, I mean, if you grew up in the 70s, you couldn't get away from on the TV all the time. A big influence.
Absolutely.
On lots and lots of people, and still resonating, you know, to some degree to this day. Of course, I'm talking about the actress Linda Lavin, who played Alice,
on the
television show from 1976 to I think like 1984 or something like that. It was a pretty decent run. Yeah, we'll get to Jimmy Carter. Perhaps we'll talk about him with our pal Harvey K. I mean, they're about the same age.
They
have a lot to discuss. but of course, they saw the Carter news. But I was actually, I guess, more impacted. I guess maybe the thought would be, I mean, it's not like when Jimmy Carter died, he was 100 years old.
100 years old. I mean, that's a good run.
That's a great run. You know what I mean? 47 more years to go. I can do this.
With the miles you're putting on. Yeah.
It's the pickling that'll help the best. It was certainly disappointing, but it was a long time coming. Let's put that way.
I mean, he was in hospice for 22 months. Typically, hospice is 6 months or less.
He wanted to stay alive long enough to vote against Donald Trump.
Which he did.
He did, yeah.
That vote got counted.
And Donald Trump actually didn't say terrible things. He wasn't entirely embarrassing.
Well, that's shocking. For is someone taking
second,
his temperature?
For a minute. We'll get there as well. But from the report at the Washington Post, Alice, man, and I didn't really watch Alice a lot. So this was what the mid-70s. So I was born in 71. 76 to 85, this thing ran. So I was, you know, do the math, 5 to 14 years old. Not really my cup of tea per se, but it was always on. I remember the
sound.
Was
this something your parents watched?
It was on the telly, you know. It was, sure. And it was on reruns as well. And so I just always, and it brings me back to that time more so than thinking of the times of I wasn't into the politics, right? So the telly was much more interesting.
There was a time when you weren't into politics. Huh?
I know, right? Well, I would say this: the political conversation that I have had during Carter's term. When I would have been, you know, third, fourth, or fifth grade on the playground, was like, well, yeah, Carter sucks.
Well, you suck.
Carter sucks. Because, of course, he lived out in the country in Wisconsin. There's not a whole lot of Democrats out there. And, of course, dumbass kids don't know what they're talking about. and I remember, you know, it was Ronald Reagan who brought the hostages home.
Yeah, you've said that you were carrying water for Reagan real young.
Well, how could you not? You know, until you learn the story.
Until
you find out the story. And we will get to that again with Harvey K. in the 5 o'clock hour. But Linda Lavin from the Washington Post, Tony Award-winning stage actor who became a working-class icon as a paper hat-wearing waitress on the TV sitcom Alice, has died. She was 87. She passed away from complications, recently discovered lung cancer, according to the email. A success on Broadway, Lavin had tried her luck in Hollywood in the mid-70s, chosen to star in the new CBS sitcom based on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, the Martin Scorsese-directed film that won an Oscar for the title Waitress. The title was shortened to Alice, and Lavin became a role model for working moms as Alice Hyatt, a widowed mother with a 12-year-old son working in a roadside diner outside of Phoenix. The show, with Lavin singing the theme song, There's a New Girl in Town, ran, as mentioned, from 1976 to 1985. And, it's funny because you think about the timing and perspectives as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have a whole lot of choices of our content.
Sure, there weren't 12 different streaming platforms going at all hours of the day with more media than you could ever consume in your entire lifetime.
You know, and every Tom, Dick, and Harry can get up their own YouTube channel and Substack and da-da-da. No, man, you had very few options. And so when a show like this comes along, again, as mentioned in the article here, a role model for working women, well, this was, mid-76, man, that was still a thing. I mean, women were barely able to get their credit cards without their husband at that time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is the time frame of it, not just the availability of other content and channels and streaming and whatnot.
Different era
for real. So this was, it did impact. I remember, like, the adults having conversations about the show, much like Maude to some degree. A little more humorous, I think, than Maude was, or even some of the other sitcoms at the time. As mentioned at the Washington Post, the series bounced around CBS schedule during the first two seasons, but became a hit leading into All in the Family. Oh, yeah, right. That was on before All in the Family. Mm-hmm. Again, that was a pretty heavy, content-driven comedy back in the day. It was among Primetime's top 10 series in four of the next five seasons. Variety magazine listed it among the all-time best workplace comedies. Lavin soon went to win a Tony for Best Actress in a play for Neil Simon's Broadway Bound in 87. Also garnered her Drama Desk, Outer Critics, and Helen Hayes Award. She was a tremendous performer with a generous heart, the Union Actors Equity said on X. They honored her with an award given to veteran performers for her work in Noah Diaz's You Will Get Sick. She was working as recently as this month, promoting a new Netflix series in which she appears, No Good Deed, and filming a forthcoming Hulu series, Mid-Century Modern, according to Deadline, which first reported her death. She also appeared in 2024 as a guest star on Elsbeth, a spinoff of The Good Wife. An iconic performer and director, Hal Prince, gave Lavin her first big break while directing the Broadway musical It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. She went on to earn a Tony nomination in Simon's Last of the Red Hot Lovers in 1969 before winning 18 years later for another Simon play, Broadway Bound. I mean, she was slumming it going on television, man. She had some serious talent. In the mid-70s, Lavin moved to L.A. She had a recurring role on Barney Miller. Oh, I remember Barney Miller, too. I'm showing my age here, folks.
A little bit.
And in 1976, was chosen to star in a new CBS sitcom based on Ellen Dershowitz's Oscar-winning Waitress comedy drama, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. She went back to Broadway. What does she have to say here? Here's Rudnick. This is Paul Rudnick's. She starred in The New Century at a concert called Songs and Confessions of a One-Time Waitress and earned a Tony nomination for Collected Stories. A star in every medium, but pure theatrical genius, blissfully funny, deeply emotional, and audiences adored her. She never disappointed. I worked with her, and just watching her rehearse and build a performance was an education and the greatest joy. I mean, there's a lot of love going on right now for the former president, Jimmy Carter, but there is a lot of love. And now I think back, I'm thinking of seeing her in the show, and the sound and the times and the font and the cars and just the era of the whole thing. It really brought me back. So there's more to it. We'll put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. So RIP to Alice. The actress, Linda Lavin, dies at 87 from complications of lung cancer. Mm-hmm. And still working.
87? 80, still a good run.
This is what I'm saying, right? Still a good run. So
Jimmy Carter.
Man. So it it's unfortunate because I wasn't paying attention to politics when I was 6 years old.
Shame on you.
And I was, again, in the same era, right? As we're talking about Alice here, you know, there were very limited options as far as your viewing was concerned and how the mm-hmm. news was delivered. And all of us, you know, as kids on that playground, you know, we'd watch what our parents watched, and there were, you know, mm-hmm. three broadcasts and maybe UHF. And I distinctly remember, as I've mentioned before on the show, the hostages, the Iranian hostage mm-hmm. crisis, as a big part. And I knew that kind of defined and the failure to, you know, negotiate them, get them back before the election, the failure of the rescue attempt. But he was also, you know, there were some issues with regard to the economy as well. And some of that was out of his hands, just like it's out of Trump's hands to some degree in our economic circumstances. There can be, you know, executive action. But ultimately, when you're talking about world politics and world business, some of those things were out of his hand, especially back in the 70s. It didn't help that, you know, Detroit was making these crappy cars, that oil was super cheap, and all of a sudden oil goes up, and yeah. now it becomes a big problem. And also, apparently him and Kennedy had an issue mm-hmm. fighting each other, rivalries back in the day, apparently, that scarred him a little bit as well and damaged him, certainly politically. But not, I don't think, as much as the Iranian hostage crisis, because for a long time, you know, that stuck with me. Why, mm-hmm. when Reagan gets in and all of a sudden, you know, the hostages are released. Well, oh, wow. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll get in here a little bit from the Washington Post. By late October, Carter's approval rating was in the mid-30s. By some measure, the contest with Reagan appeared close, but state by state, the election was shaping up as a big victory for the Republican nominee. The two met for a debate in late October in Cleveland, where Reagan uttered the words that encapsulated the president's plight: "Are you better off than you were 4 years mm-hmm. ago?" And I mean, they're still saying that to this day.
Oh, absolutely. But the difference is, when you look at that election, that's an example of a mandate.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an example of an overwhelming yes. show of, we want a different way. That was not what happened this time.
Election day coincided with the first anniversary of the hostage crisis. Carter was told by his advisors the previous night that the election was lost. Reagan won an easily popular vote victory mm-hmm. and an electoral college landslide. Hamilton Jordan, Carter's chief, White House chief of staff and his closest political confidant, was asked later as part of an oral history project on the Carter presidency to explain what happened. When people ask me why we were defeated, I say the hostage crisis, which was seen as a failure of Carter to free the people after being held so long, the general state of the economy, and the Kennedy challenge. Without one of those three problems, we might have been elected. One of those three problems, the most significant, was the Kennedy challenge. And that was interesting to me, because mm-hmm. from my perspective, it was a hostage crisis. We'll get into that as well. Plus your calls, 855-752-4842. So long, Alice. She doesn't work here anymore.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hey, welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Monday to us all. You can join us on the lines, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Mark from the Sex. Yes, Linda Lavin also did a stint as a policewoman on Barney Miller. She had an affair, Wojo. She had an affair. Yeah, she was on Barney Miller as well. I know, man. So, yes, Alice, the actress, of course, the fictional character, Alice, she has passed away along, of course, with Jimmy Carter. We talked a little bit about that. I want to throw this one out there in this segment. We'll circle back on this topic with our pal Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. But the Washington Post read a little bit of that piece in the last segment. That one's entitled 12 Months That Crippled Jimmy Carter's presidency. Again, I'm talking about the Iran hostage crisis, his beef with Kennedy, and of course, the economics of the time. You can never forget what Reagan said. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And apparently people were not. Whatever that can be said now, we'll see what happens. You know, when the start of this year starts, folks, you know, make your notes. Whatever your subjective criteria may be, you know, call it what you want. Maybe it's the gas prices. Maybe it's the GDP. Perhaps it's the unemployment levels, right? Perhaps whatever your metric is for gauging how this incoming mega administration is going to do, make your notes. Take a note, and then we'll circle back on those items, you know, in 3, 6, 12 months, and we'll see how things are. We'll see how they progress. I'm not rooting against this country, but I'm pretty sure some of these policies may be disastrous.
Yeah,
but maybe. To the point, the 12 months that crippled Jimmy Carter's presidency, we talked a little about. Now, they reference back to a New York Times article from 2023. And I just want to read about 4 or 5 paragraphs to kind of remind the folks of what was going on. This was by Peter Baker, March 18th of 2023 in the New York Times, entitled A 4-Decade Secret, One Man's Story of Sabotaging Carter's Re-Election. A prominent Texas politician said he unwittingly took part in a 1980 tour of the Middle East with a clandestine agenda. Ooh, tell me more. It's been more than 4 decades, but Ben Barnes said he remembers it vividly. His longtime political mentor invited him on a mission to the Middle East. What Mr. Barnes said he did not realize until later was the real purpose of the mission: to sabotage the re-election campaign of the President of the United States.
Oof.
It was 1980 and Jimmy Carter was in the White House, bedeviled by a hostage crisis in Iran that had paralyzed his presidency and hampered his efforts to win a second term. Mr. Carter's best chance for victory was to free the 52 Americans being held captive before Election Day. That was something that Mr. Barnes said his mentor was determined to prevent.
Ooh, not ideal.
I mean, depends on how you look at it, right?
His mentor, look at it in terms of, you know, humans being returned to their families.
No, just wait. Well, wait.
Just wait.
Just wait.
Sure.
His mentor was John B. Connolly Jr., a titan of American politics and former Texas governor who had served 3 presidents and just lost his own bid for the White House. A former Democrat, Connolly had sought the Republican nomination in 1980, only to be swamped by former Governor Ronald Reagan of California. Yeah, you don't really hear much about that race, do you? I mean, Reagan just rolled everybody over. Now, Connolly resolved to help Mr. Reagan beat Carter and, in the process, Mr. Barnes said, make his own case for becoming the Secretary of State or Defense in a new administration. What happened next, Mr. Barnes has kept largely secret for 43 years. Mr. Connolly, he said, took him to one Middle Eastern capital after another that summer, meeting with a host of regional leaders to deliver a blunt message to be passed to Iran. Don't release the hostages before the election. Mr. Reagan will win and give you a better deal. Then shortly after returning home, Mr. Barnes said, Mr. Connolly reported to William J. Casey, the chairman of Reagan's campaign and later director of the Central Intelligence Agency, briefing him about the trip in an airport lounge. All the good things.
The most secure place.
All the good things happened. Well, Mar-a-Lago wasn't open. Carter's camp had long suspected that Mr. Casey or someone else in Reagan's orbit sought to secretly torpedo efforts to liberate the hostages before the election, and books have been written on what came to be called the October Surprise. But congressional investigations debunked previous theories of what happened. Mr. Connolly did not figure in those investigations. His involvement, as described by Mr. Barnes, as a new understanding of what may have happened in the hard-fought, pivotal election year. With Mr. Carter now 98 and in hospice, well, again, this is a couple years ago, Carter has now passed, Barnes said he felt compelled to come forward to correct the record. Quote, history needs to know that this happened, Mr. Barnes, who turns 85 next month, said in one of several interviews, his first with the news organizations about the episode. I think it's so significant, and I guess knowing that the end is near for President Carter put it on my mind more and more and more. I feel like we've got to get it down some way. Now, Barnes is no shady foreign arms dealer with questionable credibility, like some of the characters who fueled previous iterations of the October Surprise theory. He was once one of the most prominent figures in Texas, the youngest speaker of the Texas House of Representatives and later lieutenant governor. He was such an influential figure that he'd helped a young George W. Bush get into the Air Texas National Guard rather than to be exposed to the draft and sent to Vietnam. Lyndon B. Johnson predicted that Mr. Barnes would become president someday. Now, confirming Barnes' account is problematic after so much time. Mr. Connolly, Mr. Casey, and other central figures have long since died, and Barnes has no diaries or memos to corroborate his account. But he has no obvious reason to make up the story and indeed expressed trepidation at going public because of the reaction of fellow Democrats. Mr. Barnes identified four living people he said had confided in over the years. And they list them off here. It doesn't matter. But the point being, all four of them confirmed that Barnes shared the story with them years ago. As far as I know, Barnes never lied to me, said one of the folks. So we only got a minute left in the segment, but there's more to it. You can find that out if you give a damn. But there it was, man. There was my hero, the guy that I grew up believing for many years. Freed the hostages. Mm-hmm. It was a show of strength. No. They were negotiating it. They actually kept those hostages there longer than they should have been for political benefit of the Republican Party, of Ronald Reagan, and all that came from that. I mean, we would have had a different world. Could have been better. Could have been worse. We'll never know. But that kind of stuff, that was going on. And what's going on now? Hell, you can tell me that's, we'll that was the only time it. In the world that ever happened. Hey, folks, come back with us. 855-752-4842. Will you please be nicer on social media?
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. My long-distance dedication going out to Casper. We're not dead yet, buddy. That's our buddy, Casper. He plays drums, does the backup vocals on that tune. Appreciate you, Casper. Have a wonderful holiday, my friend. Great to see you even so shortly. 855-752-4842. Rock on. Elon Musk, this guy. You know, why, you know, the fact that we have to, like, all these characters are now, like, forced upon us. Not only is he the richest man in the world, apparently he's the biggest D-bag in the world as well.
And, don't be so mean.
Oh, I'm so mean. I'm so mean. Well, I mean, he did say some things.
He did say some things.
He said some things, and lots of folks saw it. And the guy's got, like, 100 million followers or something on his ex, although the value of that property has diminished quite a bit since he took it over. But my quote here, or my source here, from the Daily Beast, initially published on December 28th, so barely dated, but note the times and the dates here, folks. That's what I'm saying. So, originally posted from the Daily Beast at noon on December 28th. Elon Musk's war on Mega has gone nuclear after the billionaire CEO blasted a social media user's comments about H-1B visas on Friday, and the former Trump chief strategist Steve Bannon called him a toddler for his response. Oh, man. A little dissension in the ranks.
I've met more regulated toddlers.
Musk liked the retarded quote. That Americans are too retarded to fill the country's tech workforce, and supported the idea that top roles should be taken up by better educated people from overseas. In response to Musk's perceived endorsement of the post, an ex-user going by the name of Stephen Mackey reposted a video of Musk from 2021 in which he spoke about SpaceX's plans for a fully reusable rocket. Everyone's basically, without knowing it, they've got a mental straitjacket on. They'll work on optimizing the thing that should simply not exist. Now, commentators quickly applied Musk's logic to H-1B, with Mackey asserting that the visas could be, quote, something that shouldn't exist. So using, you know, some random Twitter guy using Musk's own previous words in a different context against him in that context. Now, a mere 6 minutes later, because, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency co-head's got lots of time on his hands, he hit back at this poor commentator. Here's what Musk said in response. Like, you get a response. You're the richest man in the world. You're gonna cut trillions of dollars off of what, Social Security, Medicare, or something. I don't know where you're gonna find that at. And you got time 6 minutes later to push back on some rando.
This man has priorities.
Oh my God! Here's what he said. The reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that made America strong, is because of H-1B. And he added, take a big step back and F yourself in the face.
He didn't censor himself, though.
No! He did not! He spelled it out.
Yes,
and
he capped
it.
All in caps.
He totally trumped it. F blank, blank, blank. Yourself in the face. Now, he typed it out.
Yes, he did.
He did the whole thing on his... Mm-hmm. Is that against... Is that, like, sexual violence on the Twitter? I don't know
what... Do they even have any, cultural norms or anything on that? I don't think so.
Take a big step back and F yourself, capitalized, in the face. I will go to war on this issue and the likes of... I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend. Now, Bannon jumped on Musk's outburst as an opportunity to chide the tech leader, writing on Getter, someone please notify Child Protective Services to do a wellness check on this toddler. So, go F yourself. And apparently, despite being told to go F himself in the face by the tech mogul, Mackey later clarified, I personally am the biggest fan of Elon on the planet and I will always be. I mean, folks, listen, when someone tells you to go F yourself in the face, you might want to reevaluate your relationship.
Well, especially if they're going to say it on the most public platform possible. I mean, it's one thing if someone says it, you know, at 3 a.m. in a bar.
Right.
It's a very different thing when they're saying it on their own platform out to billions.
But wait. There's more.
So
just running through the Daily Beast lineups here. So again, December 28th, F yourself in the face. Another headline from Daily Beast. Elon Musk turns mega civil war nuclear. F yourself in the face. Steve Bannon slams scam H-1B visas as Loomer. This is the Laura Loomer. Another one we get to, you know, get her name. Unfortunately, in this crazy world. Urges the GOP to protect Trump from Musk. Wait, what?
Protect Trump
from Musk. And then there's a few more, and then it gets to the one that really matters. Here is a tweet from Elon Musk. Let's see. This would be a mere 23 hours later, at 11 o'clock on December 29th. Here's what Mr. Elon Musk, go F yourself in the face. This is a hill I'm going to die on. I'll fight more than more than you could possibly comprehend. Here's what he said. Please post a bit more positive, beautiful, or informative content on this platform.
What?
But I mean, did you just look at your stream here from the last couple of days? Please post a bit more positive, beautiful, or informative content on this platform. So perhaps, you know, go F yourself in the face, please.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Please. If you said please, would that be better? Will you please go F yourself in the face?
Would you please kindly go F yourself in the face?
And thank you. You got it. You know,
and thank you.
Please and thank,
thank
you.
You.
Very
we
important.
We teach the toddlers.
Yes.
And then they carry it forward.
Come on. So within the span of 24 hours, the world's richest man jumps on some nobody, presumably. I don't know what the guy is. Mackey said some things that Trump did. Trump, Musk, whatever.
Mm-hmm. The
narcissist toddler didn't like and found time in his busy schedule while he's, running Tesla and SpaceX and finding out where all the inefficiency are in government. Within 6 minutes, told a dude to go F himself in the face. And the dude is like, yes, thank you, Mr. Musk. I still love you. And then Musk comes out less than 24 hours later lamenting people not posting positive, beautiful, or informative content on this platform.
Uh-huh. Has he taken a look at what he's done to the platform? I mean, maybe he just needs to try something a little new. You know, I hear there's this new platform called Blue Sky.
Oh, yeah. Go buy that one?
No. No.
Come on, buy it all. It's all mine. And so even within so this is the mega war, right? The mega whatever. And we'll get into that. And can everybody lose? That'd be okay with me.
Yeah.
But Laura Loomer was being critical, this other mega.
Can she be
mega.
Anything else?
I don't know. I don't know the lady very, all I see is what the reporting is and why I'm, it's like Steve Bannon or the pillow guy. And where's the pillow guy anyway? I haven't seen the pillow. Where is the pillow guy?
Has anyone checked on him?
Man, we should check on him because that was like the last guy. I'm like, who and why and what? Kind of how I feel about Loomer.
That was last season's cast, though.
Right. American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. New characters every time.
Some of them are reprising roles. Some of them are a little changed. But we've got new ones.
Oh, man. I had a point. It's lost upon me. 855-752-4842. Yeah, where's the pillow guy? Anyway, Laura Loomer had her account suspended, her check mark uncheck mark, he was literally pushing back, using his platform to take away some of Laura's free speech. I don't know. Of course, it's not free speech.
Oh, but he's the biggest defender of free speech, Dom.
I'm going to take your blue check mark away. And so he was playing games in that ring. So not only did he respond to this guy in 6 minutes, and not only is he all the things, the space, he's also got time to go in and
at least individually moderate accounts.
Take self and Laura Loomer. Like, he had to do something. He had to tell somebody. If he didn't do the code himself, he had to go. He took time out of his day to be petty. And you're the richest man in the world, yo. You'd think, but maybe not, because if you're a hoarder, you got some mental issues to begin with. I would never be a billionaire, man. I'd spend all that money.
Think of all the tequila you could buy, Dom.
There's only so you
gotta diversify a little.
Sooner or later, you can't take anymore. Then you really gotta figure out what you're doing with your life. And I would suggest that perhaps Elon Musk, reconsider what you're doing with your life. Because if you're asking people to be more positive and beautiful and informative, less than 24 hours after you tell people to go F themselves in the face, I think there's like an up-down thing going on there. There might be some things, that could be concerning for those, if anybody cares about this guy like Mackey. Apparently still loves him very much. 855-752-4842. Jack from Mac, we love you very much. Happy days, Mac. Jack, what do you got for us?
Hey, happy new year to you guys.
Thank you.
Hopefully it will be better, but who knows? Anyway.
All we got is hope, man. We got hope.
Yeah. So let me think now. This is the administration that won on deporting 11 million people.
Yes.
That's the one.
This is the administration that has always said, we want American stuff for Americans. For instance, we don't want foreign oil. All American oil should go to Americans so the price of gasoline will go down. Well, all of a sudden, one of the leaders in this administration wants to import tens of thousands of people on special visas. There's no hypocrisy there, is there? Of course, there are a couple other things going on here. When Bernie Sanders ran for presidency, he proposed a free college education for everybody. And the cost of his proposal was estimated at $40 billion. That's less than the unrequested increase in the Pentagon budget.
Mm.
That is the money that was given to the Pentagon that they didn't even ask for. They got more than that. And if we had put that into education at that time when Sanders first was running for president,
yeah,
probably we wouldn't have this kind of an issue now with people with, not enough engineers. Isn't that a funny thing?
Yeah, it's amazing how that works and what the priorities are, Jack. Thanks for the call, man. Happy New Year to you and yours as well. But even with that, even with the free education, free, quote unquote free, even with a subsidized or paid for education, folks got to have to want to engage in that. You know what I mean? You can't just like sign up and get the knowledge. You have to want to
learn. Lead a horse to the water and all that.
Yeah, and all that. And folks got to do that. And I did see some pretty terrible memes, you know, looking at, you know, some hillbilly types like, you know, once you get rid of those foreign workers, I'm going to get me one of them tech jobs. You know, I mean, it's pretty terrible. I mean, I get all the stereotypes and everything, but there is some sense of truth to it, which makes it striking that if you don't engage, if you don't get the education, you know, then someone else is going to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And if using the H-1B visas is suppressing wages, you know what I mean? Then how is that literally any different than using, you know, the unskilled, I don't want to call unskilled labor, the farm labor or the agricultural labor, the undocumented or those using inaccurate I-9s? Using those folks also depresses the wages. So you have, you know, these billionaires. And the headline from electrek.com, Tesla replaced laid off U.S. workers with foreign workers using H-1B visas that Musk wants to increase. And, you know, these are the kinds of stories and topics that concern me, because while there's all sorts of reasons to discuss visas and work permits and all those kinds of things, they're very relevant and important to not only our economy, but to our culture and how we exist with our neighbors. I question when the billionaires get involved, like, well, what's his angle? Well, that's his angle. He wants the cheaper labor.
Duh.
Come back with us, 855-752-4842. They're not working for you, folks.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Make sure you stick around. Top of the hour, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, going to join me in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll get to some of your calls here as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Tom from L.A., mega divide and conquer. They're doing it themselves. Well, it certainly seems that way now, but we'll see when it comes down, when the rubber hits the road. Do they unify on legislation? Because the bickering from the crazies is always going to happen, man. That's what they do. I read the headline here, and I want to get a little bit into it. Now, again, I'm not a regular source of mine. Electrek.co. That's electrek.co. This is from today. Tesla replaced laid-off U.S. workers with foreign workers using H-1B visas that Musk wants to increase, Fred Lambert reporting. I've seen other reporting quote this source, so take it for what it's worth, but this is a little bit of what they say. That Tesla replaced some of its U.S. employees who were let go as part of a big wave of layoffs earlier this year with foreign workers using the aforementioned H-1B visas, which Musk is now campaigning to increase. Over the last week, Musk has been promoting the increase in H-1B visas, which are used to bring foreign workers to the U.S. for, quote, specialty occupations. Yeah, like radio.
Like radio.
Total specialty. You're not qualified.
Takes a lot of skill.
You're not qualified, Musk. Now, qualified foreign workers need to be sponsored by a company to get the visa, which lasts 3 years, extendable to 6 years, after which the holder needs to reapply. The visa holder must maintain employment at the visa sponsor to retain the work visa. The worker would have to leave the country if the employment ends for whatever reason. This has led to some criticism as it gives tremendous power to the employer and can lead to a modern version of indentured servitude. I've seen that thrown around by like folks like Steve Bannon as well. Now, while there are obvious benefits to bringing skilled workers into the U.S., people are divided on the issue because those workers are often paid less than U.S. workers, putting negative pressure on compensation, especially in the tech industry, on top of the moral questions about holding visas over the heads of foreign workers. That's why the U.S. Congress has mandated a 65,000 visa cap, limiting the number of H-1B visas that can be issued each fiscal year, plus an extra 20,000 for foreign people coming out of graduate programs at U.S. universities. The Tesla has been a big user of the visas, and Musk has been using his newfound political influence to promote increasing the cap of H-1B visas. He received significant pushback from his new friends. Pushback from the new friends. Is that what we're calling it now?
Oh, man.
On the right side of the political spectrum in the U.S., who see this visa as being used to steal jobs from Americans. And he goes on to quote the F yourself in the face and so on and forth. So forth. So laid off U.S. workers. Backfilled some of those jobs with H-1B visas at lower cost to Tesla, i.e. greater profitability, but also American workers not getting those jobs. So there you go. I mean, if because the billionaire, he doesn't care. I mean, he's all about the bottom line, right? He wants
to. Well, absolutely.
He wants more.
I mean, he needs more and more billions.
Give it all away for just a little bit more. So if you think he's working, if you think Elon Musk or Donald Trump, that they're going to work for you, you know, might want to question that. Question everything. That's what I suggest. 855-752-4842. Gary from Sussex, you are up. Happy days. Gary, what do you got for us?
Well, the first thing I wanted to let you know, I did get your text.
All right.
And we'll get the I did get it, but
why didn't you reply, man? You didn't even give me like a smiley emoji or anything, man. You gotta
When I get that off the phone,
okay,
I'll get a smiley emoji.
All right.
But I did want to let you know that I did get it right after Christmas. I owe you.
Yeah, you owe me, man. You owe me big. And interest is compounding.
I know.
All in smiley faces.
Yes. All right, what do you got, Gary? What's your thought?
Okay. I want to talk about Jimmy Carter. Now,
sure.
You know, this morning or this afternoon, Earl was talking about right before your show. He said, What has Jimmy Carter done for you? Okay, now it's all positive stuff I'm going to give you. I like Jimmy Carter. I voted for him, but he was the last Democrat that I ever voted for. But I like him. He's a good Christian man. You cannot come up with a better guy morally. As far as president, no, he wasn't the best. What he did for me was he made my interest rate go when I bought it, my house in 75. It was at 9%. It went all the way up to like 16%. Money was really hurting. My bills were getting up. We couldn't afford to go out to dinner. I couldn't take the kids out to dinner. So we figured out a way. So we went to Taco Bell for 39 cents. We all got a taco and we shared one gigantic soda and got like three extra cups, small cups. So we made it. Nowadays, what he did show, he showed the world what a moral Christian president could be. I don't think we ever will have anybody like him. And I don't think that we ever will again. And I don't think we ever had anybody in the past. The guy was a great, great man. Was he the best president? No. But a great human being.
Would you let me ask you this, Adam? And I would contrast, Gary, you know, your description of now the recently deceased Jimmy Carter to that of the guy that presumably you voted for that's going to take the White House again. What's more important to you, being a quote-unquote great president or being a quote-unquote great man?
I think being a great man will make you a great president. But the thing is, I hope,
but that didn't work for Carter.
That's what I asked you, right? Yeah, I know. His legacy when he left office, it was terrible for him. But
do you think Ronald Reagan kind of stiffed him on the whole negotiation for the hostages thing, man? Was that great work by a moral man in Ronald Reagan?
You know, I don't know what went behind the scenes on all.
Well, Gary, your internet's not broke, man. Google it. Carter was kneecapped by the Republicans.
It'll be in the show notes.
It'll be in the show notes. Hey, thanks for calling, Gary. You owe me a text, man, and some dinner. We'll figure it out. Folks, stick around. Come back with us. Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin. Green Bay is up next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.